Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotte in Washington, D.C.
So first, this climate finance needs to be increased. It's insufficient, and the quality of the finance also needs to be improved.
Action Against Hunger is hailing the fund agreement that will provide financial assistance to countries bearing the brunt of climate change.
We try to look into the electoral transparency and inclusion. We look at the electoral preparedness by the organizing the election board. How prepared are they to run that particular election?
DRC opposition groups say they are troubled by the European Union's decision not to deploy poll observers to monitor the upcoming election.
The first, I think, takeaway is that this conference was needed. From starting a virtual one, and the second one was in Rwanda, less than 3,000 participants. This one, it was 5,100 participants.
And the annual International Conference on Public Health in Africa and in the Zambian capital, Lusaka. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Israel has resumed military operations in Gaza as the week-long truce expired Friday. Wrapping up intense diplomacy in the region, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken blamed Hamas for the end of the pause, but is urging for another one. VOA's White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wadakuswara has this report.
Scenes of devastation in Rafah refugee camp as Israel resumes its bombardment following the end of the week-long truce, and in Khan Yunis, also in southern Gaza. Meanwhile, rockets were fired from northern Gaza toward Israel. The two sides blamed each other. Speaking from Dubai, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken joined Israel in blaming Hamas.
Hamas reneged on commitments it made. In fact, even before the pause came to an end, it committed an atrocious terrorist attack in Jerusalem, killing three people, wounding others, including Americans. It began firing rockets before the pause had ended, and as I said, it reneged on the commitments it made in terms of releasing certain hostages.
The truce ended early Friday as Blinken left Israel. Hamas accused him of giving Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu permission to resume strikes.
It was clear yesterday that the Israeli side wants to go back to fighting, as several ideas were put forward by mediators, and we accepted three of them. And despite that, the Israeli side said no, no, no. Every time.
With more than 100 hostages still held by Hamas, another truce could restart if both parties agree. Blinken said the U.S. is pushing for it. He again urged Israel to avoid further mass displacement of Palestinians and damage to critical infrastructure, and to begin discussion about what happens to Gaza once the fighting ends.
How's it governed? Where does the security come from? How do we begin to rebuild? And critically, how we get on a path to a just and lasting peace. And for us, of course, that has to result in a state for the Palestinians.
Earlier this week in Ramallah, West Bank, Blinken told Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas that the U.S. is set to impose visa bans on Israeli settlers who attack Palestinians in the West Bank, signaling a tougher stance from the Biden administration as international pressure mounts on Israel.
It's around 1,000 children have had an upper or lower limb, or both, amputated these past weeks, around 1,000. Again, it's callous to think that we are now, to know that we are now apparently returning to that.
The UN is urging Israel to abide by international humanitarian law and ensure the protection of civilians. The Israeli military says it has taken steps to do so. Patsy Wadakuswara, VOA News, Washington.
In Dubai, the International Humanitarian Aid Agency, Action Against Hunger, is hailing the fund agreement that will provide financial assistance to countries adversely affected by climate change. The accord, called the Loss and Damage Agreement, was reached at COP28 in Dubai. The summit brings together experts to discuss the impact of climate change. This as Action Against Hunger releases a new report which calls on government to find solutions to the link between climate change and food security. For details about the international organization's response to the loss and damage agreement, I reach Marie Skosker, who is at the summit in Dubai. She is an analyst on food systems and climate crisis for Action Against Hunger.
On the loss and damage fund that was operationalized yesterday, it was very long-standing call and demand from the civil society, so we're really happy to see it becoming real, actually. It's a real moment for climate justice, and it's the first time that we have this reparation dimension in climate finance. Then we still have some reservations about how this fund will be organized. We believe the World Bank that is going to host the fund may not be the right institution for it, but this can evolve in the future. Obviously, there are also many challenges ahead. We still need to have more pledges coming in.
But Marie, a lot of pledges are made during such conferences or summit. However, deliverables are sometimes not forthcoming. What do you think is going to be different this time?
Well, we think it's going to be maybe quicker than usual. For example, the Green Climate Fund, it took years for it to become a reality. And this time, we think the urgency of the situation and the current situation would enable the fund to become a reality quite quick. And also the difference and the thing that is very welcome is that there will be a possibility for directly affected communities to access the fund, which is unusual. Often with those big multilateral funds, it's only states or institutions that can access it. And this time, there will be a community access window, and this is really, really important.
One of the calls that Action Against Hunger is making is for the increased access to climate finance for the most vulnerable. Do you think this is even feasible?
So this is exactly what we are asking for, also for the rest of climate finance that exists. So first, this climate finance needs to be increased. It's insufficient, and the quality of the finance also needs to be improved. For example, very much finance is delivered through loans instead of grants, and this can worsen the debt crisis for some countries. Then we also hope to see a better distribution between the finance that goes to mitigation and what goes to adaptation. Adaptation is underfinanced right now when it should be 50-50. It should be 50% for mitigation and 50% for adaptation. It's very much important for the countries that are most impacted because adaptation is what they need. Adaptation finance is what they need to adapt their systems and to their agriculture, for example.
Talking about agriculture and the transformation for food systems, how would this help in this fight against climate change?
So as Action Against Hunger, what we advocate for food systems transformation is agroecology, because it's a solution that really ticks all the boxes. It's good for mitigation, it's good for adaptation, for human rights, for ecosystem, and it also puts at the center the smallholder farmers compared with other approaches that sometimes rely a bit too much on technological solutions and do not answer or correspond to the needs of the smallholder farmers that make up the majority of the population who feed us, actually.
Marie Koskure is an analyst on food systems and climate crisis for Action Against Hunger. She spoke with me from Dubai, United Arab Emirates.
We're bringing women's voices to the conversation on things that matter to hearts and minds of women.
We are here at Kalerwe Market in Uganda, Kampala, where in this whole market, women are crying out for their situations to change.
With strong opinions and expertise on things that impact and change their lives.
here in Kinshasa, campaigns to raise awareness against the spread of coronavirus are common, but getting that information to people who have no access to water, electricity, or money can be a challenge.
From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent.
I think a big thing for me is just being able to say that when these protests are happening, does it turn around into policy?
We hear your voices. Women's voices, our voices, and add your voice to the conversation each week right here on the Voice of America. Check your local TV listings.
In the DRC, opposition groups say the decision of the European Union not to deploy poll observers to monitor the elections is troubling. This after expressing concern that the Electoral Commission, or CNE, has yet to demonstrate commitment toward addressing their concerns about the lack of transparency in its processes. It comes as several opposition parties petitioned the Constitutional Court seeking to compel the electoral body to publish the voter list to be used for the elections. They are also saying the presence of both local and international poll observers could help ensure transparency of the elections. Mikel Injang is a long-term poll observer who has monitored elections in European and Asian countries and is currently in the DRC to monitor the December 20 polls. I reached him to talk about the situation as candidates step up their campaigns before the vote.
Let me just summarize that the environment is very, very challenging. As of now, the campaigns were launched on the 19th, and the first day, people were kind of trying to launch their campaign activities, and after that, it has gone to a low key, even though they are still doing door-to-door. Some are doing by caravans, and some are going with vehicles, just trying to sensitize their people. But it is not as it used to be.
As a long-term observer, what do you normally look for?
Yeah, as a long-term observer, there are a whole lot of things which you have to look at. We try to look into the electoral transparency and inclusion. We look at the electoral preparedness by the organizing the election board. How prepared are they to run that particular election? Are the materials, have they trained the personnel? Are the personnel skillful? What are their deployment plans from the HQ to the regions and regions to the sub-regions and then the polling station? Are logistics in place? What is the security put in place? And they will also try to look into the political tolerance. Are they friendly? Is there tension? All those type of things. We try to interview or work with our interlocutors, administrators, and then also try to meet the civil society organization, marginalized group, the LGBT. So there's a whole lot of things that we look in that aspect. For campaign, how violent is the campaign? Like here, there's the region where I am, there's a whole lot of things going on where some people have a particular camp where others cannot go there. And we're also trying to look at the misuse of administrative resources. Are they using hate speech? We look into gender perspective. Are they being included in the activities, handicaps, all those type of things? We look into the judiciary. How is the judiciary organized? Do they have some transparency in the way they adjudicate or handle complaints concerning election, all those type of things, we look into them. Then if short-term observers are coming, we prepare the ground for them.
In your estimation, what are the two major issues that should exist to ensure elections in a country are credible, from your experience?
I think for an election to be credible, it's just the inclusion part. If the organizing institutions opens up to the society, for the society to accept what they are doing and see that there's no fraud behind the scene, or there are certain things that they might be doing behind the scene. So electoral transparency and inclusion is just a key word. And also, I think of the judiciary. If there's a strong judiciary that can handle adjudication, that can handle and adjudicate complaints, electoral complaints, I think it's going to be of great help to foster democracy and electoral, to reduce the risks of electoral violence.
Mikel Njang is a long-term poll observer. He spoke with me from the Congolese capital, Kinshasa. The annual International Conference on Public Health in Africa has ended in Lusaka, Zambia, with the World Health Organization, or WHO, and partners calling for stronger action to accelerate childhood vaccination in Africa. One in five children in Africa still miss basic life-saving vaccines. Under the theme Breaking Barriers, Repositioning Africa in the Global Health Architecture, the four-day conference spotlighted cutting-edge research and innovations and presented African-led solutions to public health challenges. For more on this conference, my colleague Douglas Mpuga reached Dr. Abdul Salam Gay, the WHO Africa Regional Emergency Director.
This Public Health International Conference for Africa is organized by Africa CDC, which is one of our first partner of World Health Organization in saving life and reducing pain in Africa. And it was an opportunity for scientists from all Africa and from the world to come talk about the challenge we are finding. The first, I think, takeaway is that this conference was needed. From starting a virtual one, and the second one was in Rwanda, less than 3,000 participants. This one, it was 5,100 participants. In number of abstract, number of presentation, all those numbers went way up. And for the content, in particular, the content that I'm the most interested about, health emergency preparedness and response, we have very fruitful discussion that was centered into a collaboration between Africa CDC and World Health Organization. That collaboration is put into a work plan, a plan of action that is called JEEP. It's not a car. It's the Joint Emergency Preparedness and Response Action Plan for Africa. It is a very comprehensive plan that have five pillars and costs around $1 billion for 5 years that we believe that if it is implemented, it will really help African countries to better prepare for the next pandemic, but also to better prepare for the smallest outbreak that most of the time is the one that is going to pandemic. There's many other thematic that was developed as important or even more important in terms of health system, in terms of communicable disease, non-communicable disease. For example, the new malaria vaccine, all those important public health news was discussed by scientists from Africa and from the world to see how to better serve Africa.
With one in five children in Africa still missing basic life-saving vaccines, how high in the agenda was the immunization program?
The immunization program, I should admit that it was not my topic. As I say, it is a big conference with 5,100 people. When you come and make take something important, you have to be focused. I was focused mostly on emergency preparedness and response. The immunization agenda was very important and well followed. They talk about catching up after COVID, where there is zero-dose children that increased a lot in many countries, like Nigeria, like other African countries, where we need to catch up. There is also immunization research, where there is several vaccine and candidate vaccine that are in development that were discussed by the participant to see how we can make sure that we are choosing the best for Africa and we are making sure that those chosen will be implementing the earliest possible.
How much cooperation do you have from the political leaders? Because they have to be involved in making sure that you're prepared for whatever happens.
Yeah, the political leader, I think, was really very involved. To start with, His Excellency, the President of Zambia, was involved and came to open the conference. There is also many other important delegations from other countries in Africa, several ministers. But in general, I think Africa CDC will know more the statistics of those who participate. But at my point of view, as partner of Africa CDC, I saw a big involvement of the political leader in Africa. One thing that was the most interesting, the President of Zambia announced that when he came, he worked hard to take the health budget from 7% to 12% in order to reach the Abuja target, which is to make sure that the health expenditure will reach 15% of the total expenditure. As far as WHO is concerned, I believe this conference was a huge opportunity. And for WHO, the Joint Emergency Preparedness and Response Action Plan is, I think, the pillar of our discussion during this conference. We, Africa CDC and WHO, agreed on working together in one plan for One Africa, and that is for the 55 member states of Africa. In those 55 member states of Africa, in a level that is different from each other, we want to work on workforce for health emergency preparedness and response, to the coordination, to the surveillance, to the logistics, and also to the risk communication and community engagement. All those was done in discussion with member states and using the National Action Plan for Health Security to make sure that what Africa needs to be better prepared will get it for the next health crisis.
Dr. Abdul Salam Gaye is the WHO Africa Regional Emergency Director. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Johannesburg, South Africa. In Zambia, Transparency International says it supports calls for President Hakainde Hichilema and other senior public officials to declare their assets. This after the U.S. Ambassador to Zambia, Michael Gonzalez, made the same request to the President and Vice President to serve as an example to public sector workers. He made the call at the recent anti-corruption conference organized by the Transparency International chapter in Zambia. The anti-graft group and civil society say the declaration of assets by the President and other senior public officials could help boost the fight against financial malfeasance and wrongdoing. For more on the issue, I reach Maurice Nyambi. He is the Executive Director of Transparency International Zambia.
This is a call that we support, and we support the call because as an organization, together with the other civil society organizations, we have actually been advocating around that same issue, that the president, as well as permanent secretaries and other senior government leaders really need to declare their assets as a demonstration of their commitment to the fight against corruption in Zambia. I think that there has been a lot of things that have been said, but until specific interventions start to be put in place, such as the declaration of assets, everything that is said remains but mere rhetoric. So we do hope that the president and his team will heed this call, because we believe that this is something that is going to demonstrate their commitment even to the fight against corruption in Zambia.
Are Zambians really demanding that their leaders declare their assets in the fight against corruption? Because the government has said on several occasions that it is committed in the fight against corruption in Zambia.
We see it from two perspectives. The first is that, yes, whilst there is no law, there is actually no law that also stops the president from making that declaration. But beyond that, Peter, you will also realize that the ruling UPND have a majority in parliament. So if they really wanted a law to be put in place that mandates the president, the vice president, as well as the permanent secretaries and other senior government officials to declare their assets, they could put that law in place even tomorrow if they so wished. And so for us, we see this really as maybe the government spokesperson just trying to use a legal loophole to try and justify why the president is not doing something that he spoke so vocally about during the time when he was in opposition.
But do you think there's a groundswell of support for a legislation to demand public officers to declare their assets?
Yes, indeed, Peter. There is a demand that is there, and there is interest even from citizens to really know and understand what their president is worth and what their leaders are worth. I would take you back to the year 2015 and 2016, when the then president Edgar Lungu did make his asset declaration, and it showed an exponential growth in his assets within an 18-month period, and that really generated a lot of interest around issues of leaders amassing personal wealth. And so that really showed that Zambians have interest in this particular matter, and they have interest in their leaders, knowing how much their leaders are worth. And so even bringing it down to this particular issue, talking about President Hichilema, for us, the starting point also is that this is a commitment that the president made when he was in opposition. Because I do recall that when that declaration for then-President Lungu was made, Mr. Hakainde Hichilema, who was then in opposition, was one of the most vocal critics of the amassing of wealth that we had been by the former president within a period of about 18 months. And he really spoke vocally about the need and the importance of leaders declaring their assets. He spoke about the need for leaders to undergo lifestyle audits. So basically, this is something that he spoke about when he was in opposition. And for us, our challenge to him is simply that he should live by the words that he spoke when he was in opposition, because that is what is actually going to demonstrate his commitment to the fight against corruption.
If the president and the vice president do not declare their assets, what does this make the fight against corruption in Zambia?
So basically, first of all, it would be a very sad occurrence if it turned out that way, because the calls really are getting louder. And the interest, even from different stakeholders, really is getting louder. So if it turns out that, these declarations are not made, or even that, the process to enact the law is not started or is not commenced, then we think that that will undermine the fight against corruption. Because the importance of asset declarations really lies in the ability that they have to give confidence and credence, to the fact that leaders are not, for lack of a better word, are not dipping their hands or their fingers where they are not supposed to dip their hands or fingers.
Maurice Nyambi is the Executive Director of Transparency International Zambia. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. In Uganda, the leader of the opposition in parliament says the group remains critical of the government's failure to address human rights violations. Attorney Mathias Mpuuga sharply rejected recent responses from government officials who have defended the administration's record as unacceptable. His remarks come after Minister of State for Internal Affairs David Muhoozi accused leaders from the National Unity Platform of advising their supporters not to cooperate with the police in their investigations. The government also dismiss accusations that Uganda is among the worst human rights violators in the world. For more reaction about the human rights situation in Uganda, I reached Attorney Mathias Mpuuga.
Were you shocked that the minister at the same time said that they did succeed in speaking to the people after claiming that they are coming from an NGO, a non-government organization? So the question is, where is that report of the police NGO, after all they spoke to them, after disguising as a non-government organization? Where's that report? So the minister, in his double talk, is again trying to be duplicitous, and we find his report contemptuous. And a forced disappearance is a crime against humanity. I advise General Muhoozi, for his integrity, to simply make an admission, and the government must answer. If it doesn't know, it must state clear that it doesn't know. So we find his report misplaced, and we rejected the statement they made in parliament. We shall reply formally on Tuesday.
Mr. David Muhoozi dismissed the statement that Uganda is among the worst human rights abusers as sweeping, unsubstantiated, and false. And he criticized you, the opposition leader in parliament, for making false and generalized claims about Uganda's human rights record.
Did I lie about the fact that over 100 people were shot on the streets of Kampala in 2019? What happened to the massacre in Rwenzururu Kingdom, where General Eruru commanded the massacre of over 400 people? Did I make any light the fact that during and after election, hundreds of people were arrested and many continue to be in detention without charge by the same government? What more does constitute abuse of human rights? How many governments in Africa or in the world can match that record of murder, of disappearance, no investigation, no report? No remorse. Civic space is being scuttled. The media is under muzzle. So what else consists that? I exactly meant that, and he knows their record.
The minister also urged individuals with evidence regarding the killings of civilians during the 2020 protests to provide this evidence to investigative bodies. And he also revealed that the government is conducting investigation to verify some of these allegations against the police. What's your reaction?
That statement was to appease Parliament and probably to appease, to occupy space on the paper he was reading from. Otherwise, let's take government 5 years to report on its own officers. We reported, we even supplied number plates with the video evidence of police patrol vehicles shooting at people, occupants shooting at innocent persons on the street. So what more do they want? Is it that they do not know the occupants of those particular police vehicles that were used? These were properly supplied. I'm very sure police vehicles were not commandeered by terrorists, by the same driver, the same persons who used them were the occupants, and therefore are culpable for murder. So who should supply that information when the commanders of those officers are still available and are at large, and therefore the minister, while I think speaking in jest, I never meant what he said.
Is the ongoing protest by opposition parliamentarians to pressure the government to address human rights violations that you expressed concern about achieved its intended purpose or objective?
In 1995, the people of Uganda adopted a consensus in the form of a constitution. The protest is not only meant to address human rights abuses, but respect the rule of law in Uganda. We have a constitution. We have other laws of the land that speak to respect for human rights, the respect for civic space, respect for different political views. The protest is meant to pressure government to respect human rights, but also in the future to desist from committing the same crimes in the name of seeking to keep political power.
Attorney Mathias Mpuuga is the leader of the opposition in parliament. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. In The Gambia, victims of atrocities committed during Yahya Jammeh's rule say they aim to bring the former head of state to face justice back home. This after a German court sentenced to life by law for his role in the group called the Junglers. They are accused of assassinations on behalf of the former head of state during Jammeh's 22-year rule. Three families, including Deida Haidara, petitioned the German court to prosecute law. He is accused of playing a key role in the murder of Deida Haidara, a local journalist, in 2013. Law is accused of stopping Haidara's car that led to his murder and driving the assailants away after the crime. Dada Haidara, the son of the victim, tells me that he welcomes the German court sentence as a first positive step in the effort to secure justice for his father's murder. He is also calling on the government to step up efforts to extradite former President Jammeh to face justice in the Gambia.
I am also not only a victim but a plaintiff in the case. So it is a very big step we took today. And why I said a very big step? Because the idea was always to have Yahya Jammeh. So by having bylaw somehow is like taking us in the right direction, hoping that one day it will be Jammeh's turn in a court of law.
You petitioned the court in Germany for the prosecution of bylaw, correct?
Not only me, three families, the Nyasi, the Haideras, and Silla. These three families were the plaintiffs in the case.
I understand that you have also been calling on the government to act, including the full implementation of the recommendation of the TRRC. So far, the government said it's in the process of doing so. What has been the response from you and the other families who petitioned the German government for the prosecution of bylaw?
Yeah, it's been so long. It's been so long, not only for my family and the other families, but the country needs it. You know, before reconciliation, we need justice. And a lot of atrocities were committed in Jammeh's era. So they cannot go unpunished because in the end, we are living in a civilized world. And justice must be part of this civilized world I'm talking about. And the rule of law must be respected. And so far, the Gambia government said that there will be prosecution, but there were so much delays without them really informing us, briefing us with the issues they're having. No, we knew that it won't be easy. to be honest, because it requires a lot of money, a lot of resources, even infrastructure and all that. But I believe if they are really open to the victims, explaining to us what are the issues, then it will make it easy for us to also understand that certain things are not met yet. That's why there's this delay. But we are here without much information. So that's what we're dealing with right now.
But the foreign minister spoke with VOA and he said the government is committed to the full implementation of the TRC recommendations, and that calls for Yahya Jammeh's extradition to face justice in the Gambia is still on course.
Yeah, we will be waiting very vigilantly. What I meant by vigilant, because we need to really be careful, because today a Supreme Court judge informed us that Gambia was not being really cooperative enough with Bailo's case in Germany. So we were all really surprised because not long ago we heard the justice minister saying that they were really cooperating with the Germans, with the Swiss, and also the Americans. So now that's why I use the term vigilant. So we'll be very careful what they say, if they are really doing it also, because this needs to be taken seriously. We went through 22 years of darkness, I can say. Now, finally, with this new rule of Barrow, we're expecting really things to be transparent, things to be really done seriously, but not like telling us this whilst, you know, is not happening on the ground.
You said the main aim is to get former President Yahya Jammeh to face justice. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, to pay for the crimes he committed during his 22 years of reign. The thing is, we cannot just like that drag him to a court of law. There should be processes, and there should be a first step to take. And I believe today in Germany, we took that first step.
Dada Haidara is the son of Deida Haidara, who was killed by the junglers. He spoke with me from the Gambian capital, Banjul. In Sierra Leone, the chief executive officer of Sierra Leone Adventures, a travel and touring company, says the tourism industry will be significantly impacted by recent insecurity concerns. Mutala Mohammed says December, which is seen as the peak tourism season, will be affected following the recent attack on the army barracks in the capital, Freetown. The attack, which drew a sharp condemnation by the Economic Community of West African State, or ECOWAS, also prompted the administration to impose a curfew while it carried out investigations to arrest those involved. Mutala Mohammed tells me that tourists and Sierra Leoneans in the diaspora are either reviewing their vacation time or cancelling their planned trips to Sierra Leone due to the insecurity concerns.
The sector that is most affected, you know, by the unrest in Sierra Leone is the tourism sector. Mostly in December, around this time, is the festive period, you know, so we expect, you know, people, you know, from all over the world, you know, to travel to Sierra Leone, you know, for holidays and all that, you know, but unfortunately, this shootout, many people have decided, you know, to cancel their trips, you know, because of the unrest. And just, I think a day or two, the UK has advised, you know, their citizens not to travel, you know, to Sierra Leone, except, you know, for very, very important, you know, reasons, you know, otherwise. You know, so it has impacted the tourism industry seriously. And mind you, as I speak to you, there is curfew. You know, initially when this whole thing started on Monday, you know, we had an indefinite curfew, but the curfew has been eased. You know, now we have from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m., you know, there is curfew. You know, so most of these events, you know, have been cancelled, you know, already as we speak. So we just hope and pray that the authorities, everything will just, you know, go on peacefully, and, you know, the government will find a reason, you know, to ease the curfew. Or if not, you know, the hospitality industry in Sierra Leone will lose billions, you know, of leones.
Are you saying that places like Airbnb, hotels and lodges will be significantly impacted?
Of course. In fact, you know, what happened, I know a friend who runs, you know, an apartment, Airbnb, you know, and I know of this particular story, you know, wherein somebody who has already booked you know, for holiday. The guest was supposed to fly in on the 5th, you know, of December. You know, just today, the person who did the booking, you know, for this guest, came to the apartment and said that they have decided, you know, to postpone, you know, the trip. So they are asking, you know, the owner of this particular apartment, you know, for refund. And this is a story, you know, across, you know, many hotels, many apartments, you know, in Freetown. People have decided, you know, to, you know, just, you know, some have cancelled, some have decided, you know, to postpone their trips, you know, because they don't know, you know, what will happen next, you know, because of the insecurity situation that we are facing, you know, in Sierra Leone at the moment.
How are Sierra Leoneans particularly reacting to this situation?
It is sad, you know, it's a sad news, you know, for many Sierra Leoneans. You know, mind you, most Sierra Leoneans, you know, back home, you know, you hardly mix a family that don't have someone, you know, in the diaspora. You know, and this at this time, you know, December mostly, this is the time that they return, you know, to visit family members and the support, you know, project, whether it's the construction, you know, family houses, support family projects, you know, in back home. So at this period, this is the time, you know, families, you know, back in Sierra Leone, you know, are expecting, you know, their relatives, you know, from the diaspora, you know, to come, you know, home. And, you know, but unfortunately, it's not going to happen, you know, again this year. Few years back, you know, we had Ebola, you know, flights were not coming in, and people decided, you know, to stay away from Sierra Leone. And, you know, I was telling somebody, I said, I don't know, you know, what's happening in Sierra Leone. You know, most time we take 2 steps, you know, forward and three steps, you know, backward. It's really sad.
Do you anticipate the gross domestic product or the GDP of Sierra Leone to take a hit following this?
Well, before this, Sierra Leone is going through a tough time, even before this period. You know, and not too long ago, we heard of, you know, one of the airlines, Air France, decided, you know, to, you know, stop their operations, you know, in Sierra Leone. It has been very, very tough, you know, flight tickets, you know, are very expensive. And the cost of living in Sierra Leone is very, very high, you know, so people are complaining, you know, even before now. You know, so, but, you know, most time during the festive period, you know, and the foreign exchange, it come in because these people are coming in, you know, to spend holidays. So they bring in, you know, the forex, the foreign exchange, you know. So, you know, most time in December, you know, things get better, you know, no matter what, no matter the situation, no matter what we are going through. You know, so this year is going to be completely, you know, different. So it's a sad day, you know, for many Sierra Leoneans.
Murtala Mohammed is the chief executive officer of Sierra Leone Adventures, a travel and touring company. He spoke with me from the Sierra Leonean capital, Freetown. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, this Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent.
Yeah. Yeah. Usher, right? Yeah. Thugga, thugga. Yeah. Yeah.
Go right around. Yeah. And right now it's time for music from our African collection. No
limit. Got that masterpiece. No limit, baby. Can get that black car. No limit. Just know when you're rolling it like me, there's no limit, baby. Make you say, no limit. I see mama murder that. No limit, baby. Can get that ghetto D girl. No limit. Just know when you're rolling it like me, there's no limit, baby. You know you fine, baby, you know that you fine. I'm just trying to make you mine, trying to make you mine. Yeah, I'm trying to make you mine. Put a tingle in your spine. We got a vibe, we got a way. You should ride on it. All of the places I can take, you girl, is limitless. So if you've never been, girl, I would just love to take you there. You don't have to worry about a thing. I gotta let me show you better than. Cause I may not know you. Just let me hold you. You be my soldier, like you from the north. Make it say, no limit. Got that masterpiece, no limit, baby. Can get that black car, no limit. Just know when you're rolling it like me, there's no limit, baby. Make it say, no limit. I see mama murder that, no limit, baby. Can get that ghetto D girl, no limit. Just know when you roll with it like me, there's no limit, baby.
clouds on decline. Baby, the clouds on decline. We roll with me and we shine. Baby, we shine. Yeah, la mama, we shine. Just pick a destination. Go ahead, show me you can get like everything. Show me like any car, any house. Baby, you can get like any ring. Anything. Then I can knock it down. All through the night, all through the day, yeah. I knock that out. Baby, you call the Sugar Ray, yeah. Cause I may not know you. Just let me hold you. You be my soldier, like you from the north. Make it say, no limit. Got that masterpiece, no limit, baby. Give you that black card, no limit. Just know when you're rolling it like me, there's no limit, baby. Make it say, no limit. I see mama murder that, no limit, baby. Give you that ghetto D, girl, no limit. Just know when you roll with it like me, there's no limit, baby. You find out that wine, baby girl, I ain't lying. Made my homie drop a dime, commit a crime, jeopardize my lifeline. Jealousy over the sign. Ain't no limit, baby, we do it like it. Ain't no limit, baby, when you a starter. Marta outsmart the rara. Fill the session with Bacardi Barbies. Kerosene, kerosene. Promise spin white machine. Thin ways and prima donna. Never limit, I'm a stunner. I'ma spend my night with them. I can put carrots all over you. Carrots all over you. Never mind me on the pop. Man, I been getting high with these fools. And she see all her friends' face, so she solo rocking. And she a real bad, bad. She ain't got a Photoshop it. No limit. I see mama murder that. No limit, baby. Give that ghetto D, girl. No limit. Just know when you roll with it like me, there's no limit, baby.
Chimaga.
Sierra to my city, see I'm riding DSM, Lego see how we date, look, I got the world at my feet, she holding my soul while I'm rocking the beat, so this is the dish and the flow is the sweet, and you know where we go, I lick at your repeat, see we chilling in the sand, relaxing my mind with my queen in my hand, my queen in my, queen in the way we land, from there and they wait, now the entrance is grand, we keep to our peace, we are one, now we stand, 2-5-5 be nation, and we run mother land, we deep in our roots for our heart. I got the juice, now you know what's man. Natale Mukatarati put it. Natarati put it. Natale Mukatarati put it. Natarati put it. See, I come from a free motherland. I'm repping TZ, let it bleed to my hand. I be. See, I come from a free motherland. I'm repping TZ, let it bleed to my hand. I be. Oh, Natale Mukatarati put it. Natarati put it. Natale Mukatarati put it. Natarati put it. See, I come from a free motherland. I'm rapping TZ, let it bleed to my hand. I think. See, I come from a free motherland. I'm rapping TZ, let it bleed to my hand. I be. Oh.
Tunavunita lakini kitaa wananita Ibra Keiko wapi na potoka Maendeleo kama New York Vitu vya all sort Motion as the issue unadhani unashukudia Your favorite sport Watu wana angaika on a daily basis Wanajaribu kufika different places Manasi ya na wiva maembe ya na menua Mishkaki inapikwa adhano unazisikia It feels good to be finally here Hanza na rungombe Tell him kana me Mtafta mtaf Tunapita tenda mti wapi basikeli zinatengenezwa Washikaji wana Na kula kila aina fura Wachina, wazungu, warabu Bonge la mixa, waoni, tabu Siku inazidi kwa kuwa tamu. Everyday ni skuku kama ule mtaa unaunganika na Lumumba na Uhuru. Watu wamechoka kupinda, inafaa kila mtu wajue it feels kushinda. Dala dala zipo 24 hours, no need to be sour. Kama unataka kusepa, hamna mtu watakukevra. But I guarantee you utarudi kutoka wapi unapokwenda. Unapokwenda
see, I come from a free motherland. I'm rapping TZ, let they bleed to my hand. I be. See, I come from a free motherland. I'm rapping TZ, let they bleed to my hand. I be. Oh.
Any party where we enter, man, them they dance. The baby, then they alas, and now we them dance. Now we sabi get them the rap, pam pam pam. Any song where we drop, we just got that wow. We not the twin full of need. Original, we not ever but to copy. Yali baka, you don't make you like a bumble. Any side where you pass, man, them call it. Tell me waiting for the way go make I go down there. We go chill from Monday to Sunday. Now you body, baby, you just they call me. Money, no money, you know they shun me. Make love all night, then I'm on it. Baby, now you love just the sweet.
That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Nicole Peters and engineer Al Santos, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, the person that eats late will not eat spoiled food. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.
Smells like a cologne and candy lotion. Like a slumber body. Sheets all on the floor just like an ocean. Building up your fortress like a mountain. Neighbors say we're causing a commotion. Like a slumber body.